Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Okay, so checking out these particular aspects. Like all medicines, vaccines can cause side effects. Symptoms to watch out after you've had the jab over the next few days are 1, bouts of extreme smugness. 2, a sense of superiority over anyone who hasn't had a vaccine. 3, absurd curiosity over whether your friends have had AstraZeneca or Pfizer. 4, a need to tell everybody how short the queue was and how smashing all the volunteers are. 5, a compelling desire to take a photo of your vaccination card and post it on social media. 6, misguided feelings of immortality. 7, failure to understand why you still can't go on a foreign holiday. And indeed, 8, ability to annoy the hell out of 20-year-olds by asking, when are you going to have yours? Oh, they've run out, have they? Well, I think so far I've managed to avoid most of those, but Sebastian, when are you having your vaccine?
Well, that's the question, I guess. I'm 23 years old, so I doubt it will be any time soon.
Oh, well, never mind. It's all okay. And Robin, I suspect you actually did fall prey to one of those routines, which I said, no, absolutely not. No way, Jose, taking a photograph of yourself and putting it on social media or your vaccine card.
I took a photograph of myself with a celebratory cup of coffee takeaway outside our local coffee house immediately after. I felt I had earned it, but I'm deeply grateful that I was among, you know, the first few to get it. One of the benefits of having a heart condition, and being able to align yourself with Tony Stark.
Okie dokie. And that basically will conclude our public service branch of showing people that even midweek drivettes can go and have the vaccine. And with about 2 hours now sort of on the clock, still appear reasonably functional within acceptable parameters. It's a kind of movie review slot with a difference, because clearly we'll be joined hopefully in the not too distant future by Richard Fitzwilliams, or we may do a completely different side of things. We might well have Rebecca Bond joining us as well, but Sebastian, as you've already heard, is with us. Robin is with us. I've seen two of the movies that effectively are going to be considered. I've had a look at Beneath. I wish I hadn't, but still, I have had a look at Beneath. And I've also seen Minari. And one of those I would give a 7 out of 10 to, and the other one, I'm afraid it's the old Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Sealed Orders, 6 out of 10 for me, and that's pushing it for Beneath. But anyway, enough of such stuff. Sebastian, have you seen either of those two?
Yeah, I haven't seen Beneath, which I sound seemingly quite lucky for, but I did catch Minari.
Yeah, well, there we are. I mean, and as I say, one of them, obviously, through Amazon, you could actually shell out $9.99 for, which is a nice way of supporting the Korean cinema, which is wonderful, and indeed actually coping with aged relatives who might sort of pop their clogs. No spoilers. Let's just move on from that. Let's turn dexterously then to that wonderful tale, which I had to double check and say, when was this filmed? Because there was no diversity in the cast. We had an all-white cast, a kind of traditional white Anglo-Saxon Protestant cast. It could have been lifted from a plot line from the 70s or 80s. You had a kind of spring break. You had all sorts of areas, including even a, dare I say it, bargain basement Johnny Depp-like character, who we think he's going to survive, but then maybe something untoward actually happens. Robin Pierce, would you like to go under the waters of the lake and share with us that Netflix extravaganza from 2013 called Beneath?
Well, when I first saw that this was available, I was curious. I mean, I am always up for a good monster movie. If it's a good monster movie, underwater, well, you know, I'm a big Creature from the Black Lagoon fan, Humanoids from the Deep. I love the horror, slasher, monster genre. It's one of the things I live for. Sadly, this is one of the things that makes me want to put my head in a microwave oven. You said it didn't have a diverse cast. Now, I thought it might have sort of kind of did, because the character of Johnny, played by Daniel Zavato, now I thought that they were trying to nudge us in the direction of his being a Native American because of his hair, the entire sort of high cheekbones, and the fact that he had some kind of Native American talisman that he wanted to give his lost love, who was going with him on this trip. This was supposed to keep her safe. Now I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So what we'll do is go to the beginning and establish that these are five high school graduates going to party on what I assume is a little island in the middle of a lake. Alex is gesturing to me, but I can't hear him.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just holding you there momentarily, Robin, as I was muted. Again, a possible side effect of the AstraZeneca vaccine. You mute yourself unintentionally. Never mind. I just want to actually test this little thing out with some of our younger folk here, who obviously haven't had the vaccine, but I won't be patronising about it, as I said at the early start of the day. Let's turn to Rebecca. When you actually sort of did your A-levels, you're sort of through there, did you feel an urge, you know, within Norwich to gather together with your friends and go out on a trip across a lake?
No, can't say I did. I remember A-levels being particularly stressful. I don't know if that was the same experience for everyone, but I think I really underestimated the jump from GCSE to A-levels. So for me, it was just constantly working. So I don't think I ever thought about congregating at a lake once.
Yeah. Relentless. She's like a machine. It's fantastic. That's why we appreciate her. Sebastian, what about yourself? If you could cast your mind back all those days to actually heading off on a boat trip, you know, I'm seeing it. Do we bond with our American friends here?
No, I think I'd have to sort of suspend my disbelief quite a lot to kind of get on board with them. Yeah. Now, I'm same as Rebecca. I think going on a boat trip would be on the bottom of my list, really.
Quite literally, especially if you've got a killer piranha in the actual lake itself. But maybe they do things differently in Barbados. Let's face it, it's slightly close. If I say Barbados, Bermuda even, or Barbados and Bermuda. Yes, Yaz de Graaf, can you remember what did you do to celebrate your time? Or did you just say, no, I'll just endeavour to actually reach the United States again?
You know, I will say it's definitely different. Since we are an island, we are small, so I'm pretty sure we did party during or after A-levels. Well, we had IB, International Baccalaureate, but yeah, I'm pretty sure one way or another we partied some way.
But going across a lake or an inland body of water with a guy who basically is perpetually filming everything, like a kind of crazy obsessive, you'd say, maybe not. I don't know. That's just a kind of reality check, Robin. I mean, I thought I'd actually just introduce it there just to kind of get a little brief survey in terms of how people can identify with, of course, the protagonists of this movie.
Well, on the last day of school, certainly in the town where I live, there is always an illicit beach party because, you know, I live in a beach resort. Anyway, they go to this remote part of the world where there is no cell phone reception. Nobody seems to know where they are except for the elderly Mr. Parks, who, as soon as he makes his entrance, we are in slasher movie tropes because he's the one that tells you, don't go near there, you will die. Terrible things are going to happen. And, you know, we begin to get a sense of why Johnny wants to give his ex-girlfriend this talisman to keep her safe. So out they row. And these are supposed to be like best friends. They're not going to be best friends for very long because three of them go swimming. We become very aware that there is something else in the water that is not the friendliest thing around. This is where the film completely falls apart because we don't expect these unknown teenage actors to be able to set the screen ablaze. They can barely deliver a coherent line of dialogue, but they are really a reprehensibly unpleasant lot of people who seem to hate each other. They are attacked by what appears to be a giant mutated catfish. Now, Alex, you said it was a piranha, but it appeared to be more of a catfish to me.
Yeah, catfish crossed with piranha. It's easily sort of mistaken. I mean, the teeth are very piranha-like.
Tetchy catfish. And the problem is, it's not a CGI catfish. It is an actual physical puppet, which makes a Roger Corman production from the 1950s, you know, like Attack of the Killer Crabs, look absolutely classic. It's a killer Muppet, Robin.
It's a killer Muppet. These things are very dangerous. You go into the water and you're attacked by a killer Muppet. Have you never seen pigs in space?
As soon as they lose one oar, they attack it with the other one and lose that. And then it becomes like a game of Russian roulette where they try to vote the least popular person on board off the boat to sacrifice themselves.
Well, not quite, because the first person they actually throw off the boat is actually dead because
already dead.
She's blended her.
Somebody actually makes the statement like, her last act will be to save the rest of us. Off she goes, bobbing along like chum on the surface. It's ridiculous.
Look, Mackenzie Rowan probably couldn't swim at the time. So, you know, she got out of the movie quick, a lot quicker than the others did.
She must have had that written into her contract. And the numbers dwindle down and the fish keeps on eating. People betray each other. There's a love affair gone wrong where one of them is going, you know, has betrayed the other one in a romantic tryst with his... Oh, good grief. It makes the Friday the 13th movies look like Oscar winners, all of them.
I'm sensing you didn't really kind of go for the fabulous sort of work of Bonnie Dennison as Kitty, and indeed Daniel Zavato as Johnny, and indeed John Orsini as Simon in this Larry Fessenden epic, then, Robert.
I don't want to hear of any of those people ever again. I don't want to waste my time.
Strangely, next up on Midweek Drive.
But what frustrated me most was... this film showed glimpses of real talent. And that was in the injury detail to the victims. I mean, they look like something that I have seen on various first aid courses over the years. They were realistic. I mean, the blood was pumping out and it seemed a realistic shade. I found that to be really, really good. And some of the scene-setting cinematography was absolutely stunning. And the fact that we've got that level of talent, the same effects crew were responsible for the physical effects and makeup on the victims as were responsible for the ridiculous-looking fish. And it just made the rest of the film frustratingly bad. Like, how can people who are this talented be responsible for a film this incomprehensibly bad? But one thing that must be remembered is that the whole thing was delivered on a budget of $1 million. And I reckon that in, you know, today's day and age, the $1 million was probably all seen on the screen because it doesn't get you very far with films.
So not a classic from 2013, though. 3.6 out of 10 was its rating, apparently, in terms of general
scores. That will never,
ever
grace the shelves of the study as long as I draw breath.
Okay, well, let's...
to get a 3 out of 10.
Let's move on, then. I mean, after that sterling recommendation. Rebecca, has this... I mean, have you seen Beneath? Did you actually say, well, it's on Netflix. I love Netflix movies. This sounds to me like the ideal movie to actually catch up with.
Fortunately, I haven't seen it. Because by the way Robin's described it, I'm not going to waste my time. I mean, the storyline particularly doesn't sound interesting as it is anyway. I think it has potential, but by the sounds of it, it hasn't reached that. So... you know, I'm not going to waste my time.
I mean, you could have in the same week have actually seen Beneath and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea Sealed Orders. I mean, that could have been, you know, a dangerous one, didn't that?
Yeah. I could have, but I didn't. And aren't I glad? However,
we welcome Kira Allsbrook to the team, of course. Kira, you've been listening to Robin with his somewhat frank and full version of his thoughts on Beneath. Is it something which you think, well, yes, I mean, I've got something to do now that the station's almost wrapped up with. I think I should watch this.
Not really, no. It just, I've just read the description, and after hearing what Robin said, it just sounds like every like single high school film where it's a bunch of college kids that go out to a lake, they all die off one by one, something reckless happens, and so no, not my cup of tea.
Always reckless if after having Jack Daniel's whiskey you go for a swim. I wouldn't advise.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a sensible thing to actually do. End of. Yasmin, got to say, you do win the award for best backdrop today. I mean, you've changed it around slightly. We obviously have the Bermudan flag, the British flag as well up there. But we have the equivalent of what I can only consider Yaz de Graaf's attempt at world domination with the map of the world in the background there. So, yes, here we are, central control. So what are your own views about Beneath? Will you be checking it out or have you?
I'm going to have to totally agree with everybody else on this one. Not on my list.
Not on her list. How we're ever going to actually resuscitate this, I don't know. Still, it was Robin's selection. Maybe it's a symptom of COVID scenarios, but still, or indeed a symptom of the vaccine. Sebastian, we started this off and you were, I think, mildly thinking about it. Do you now think as though, actually, yes, what the hey, I'll go for it because it sounds as though it could be a hidden gem.
No, I think I'm going to side with everyone else. I might pass. I do like a good B movie, but no, I think this, more B than movie.
There we are. Or trying to be, or not. Mind you, it did have Bonnie Dennison in there, so that's always nice. And, of course, the wonderful Mark Margolis, who you didn't mention, who played Mr. Parks, the wise relative, who effectively has a key role to play in the end. No spoilers, but it is quite a shotgun moment, I would say.
Also, the voice of doom that says, don't go out on the lake. You know, it's like Crazy Ralph on the Friday the 13th movies. You know, don't go to Camp Death. It's got a blood curse.
And, of course, we all go to Camp Death as a result of that. OK, we are still waiting for Richard to actually join us, but let's continue to the next little phase. A movie that, again, I've managed to look through, Minari. Sebastian, you have seen Minari. Would you like to take us through your thoughts on this Korean-American thing, also produced by Brad Pitt, amongst other things?
I didn't know it was produced by Brad Pitt, but that does make sense, because I know he does... he did... Tree of Life, which this film reminded me of. It, like Tree of Life, is a family drama from the perspective of a young boy, a family that moves to Arkansas from, I think, California, but they're originally Korean, in the 1980s, with the father has ambitions to get a farm up and running, but as you can imagine, it's not a very easy life, especially for Korean immigrants at the time. I loved it, honestly. I've got to say I was a really big fan of it. I think the performances across the board were outstanding. Steven Yeun, who I think is up for Best Actor, for the patriarch, David, no, sorry, that's the son, he's Jacob, was, just absolutely outstanding. The young boy as well, played by Alan Kim, in the film, is suffering from a heart condition that means he can't run.
David, don't run. That's my attempt at Korean. It doesn't really work.
No, you do hear that quite a lot. I thought he also was just terrific for such a young actor delivering such a nuanced performance. I really loved him in it. As well, the grandma who shows up and a third of the way in to look after the kids. Yoo Jung, I'm not sure if I'm getting that name right. Also kind of bears repeating, also a terrific performance. But yeah, it's a very tender film that I really found quite resonant. It's beautifully shot check the cinematographer's name, by Lachlan Milne. I'm not familiar with, but he also did Hunt for the Wilder People by Taika Waititi. Very delicate, very honest. It felt very authentic. I think it's a fictionalized account of the director's youth, and it does have that really yeah, raw, authentic feel to it. Yeah, I loved it. Thorough recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slow burner, no pun intended. Bit of a spoiler there in terms of the term. But in terms of the way in which the thing developed, I would tend to agree with respect to that. Alan S. Kim is young David, who I think has a hole in the heart condition from that. Also, a nod in the direction of Mr. Harlan, of course, Daryl Cox, or his go. He was speaking in tongues, obviously. But in terms of that side of things, it took me a little while to get into it. And initially I was thinking, okay, so I've gone for this on Amazon Prime. I've shelled out my $9.99 rental fee for the whole sort of sequence, which would at least support the whole thing. If I'd gone to see it at the cinema, where's it actually going from? But yeah, I mean, I think it certainly worked for my good self. Rebecca, Minari, have you seen it? Are you intending to see it? What are your thoughts on this?
I haven't seen it, but this time, unfortunately, because it does sound good. I like the idea of the storyline, and from what Sebastian described, it does sound very well made. And I think with a subject like that, it does take, you know, some work to really make a story like that work. So I think I'll definitely give that a go. It sounds interesting, sounds like it's got a great cast. So yeah, that's definitely on my list. I'll watch it at some point.
Okay. Yaz, your thoughts on this a tale of a Korean family starting a farm in 1980s Arkansas. Or Arkansas, probably Arkansas. Maybe the S is a W. I don't know. They pronounce it Arkansas in the movie, and it's Arkansas in the descriptor. It's the Americans. Over to you.
I agree with Rebecca. I think this one's going to be on my list also. It sounds good. Hopefully I can get through the slow burn. But besides that, I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I would have put it down, and probably apart from Robin, everybody else is too young to remember this, as what I'd consider to be a very good Sunday afternoon film, a kind of Sunday matinee movie, where you'd watch the whole thing through a bit like the Hayley Mills movies used to actually be in terms of blowing in the wind or various other aspects within that. Kira, what about yourself, though? I mean, this could be critical. I mean, we've already heard about the fact that even in Derbyshire, they don't go as crazy as they go as they do in Wales, for instance, or indeed in Middle America after they've done their A-levels. But what are your own thoughts, Kira, about Minari?
See, I don't know. It's not my type of film, and that's it. Just doesn't seem like there's much of a storyline. I know it's about a family, you know, that's moving to America and starting up their own life, and it's just not my type of film. There's not enough action in it, and there's not enough gore, and
yeah, I mean, if only Minari had actually had a mutated catfish to kind of spice up the aspect. Yeah. Could have been ideal, you know. Could have been ideal. Yeah.
Or if it was Disney inspired, I'd watch it. So,
tragically, Kira, and I know that you and I are almost at one with this, but sometimes we live in a reality which isn't Disney inspired. It's just one of those things, you know. We just have to work through that. And Minari, in case people are wondering, I believe is a kind of a crop, not unlike watercress or something that actually is grown, hence the reason that there is a wonderful sequence where the grandmother effectively sows the seeds for Minari, which is particularly apt given that she's also partly behind a very significant part of the movie where you think, what? You've left her alone here? She's had a stroke? Are you insane? What's she doing playing with matches? Anyway, that's another line which we'll actually work through. Robin, can you see Minari actually being a sort of entry into the Pierce library?
Well, it sounds interesting. It sounds very much like a Sunday afternoon movie, like you said. But I don't know that I'd want to shell out £10 for it. I'm actually leaning very heavily towards aligning myself with Kira here for the same reasons. It might be too slow a burn for my tastes.
Yeah. Well, that, because of course,
it's not the life of times of Londo Minari from Babylon 5. So, you know.
Yes, I think you'll find that's actually Londo Mollari, M-O-L-L-A-R-I,
oh, rats,
as opposed to Londo Minari. I mean, I'm sure Patricia Tolman will be most disappointed if you can't even get the cast list from Babylon 5 sorted out.
I was hoping to just slip that one by you as a bad pun.
Yeah, I know. But still, blame it on the vaccine, Robin. It's one of those side effects which hasn't been mentioned. But still, you know, this annoying tendency to actually just pick up on pedantry and so on. Okay, well, again, interesting in terms of the scores for Metacritics and so on. A Metacritic score of 89 and indeed 7.6 out of 10. So pretty much double what was given for Beneath in terms of overviews, etc. And I think we managed to cope without Richard Fitzwilliam's view of Minari entirely. Although, astoundingly enough, we just say those words, and who should actually be knocking on the virtual door, fresh from his BBC London experience, etc., but the aforementioned Richard Fitzwilliams. Richard, welcome along to the first of a two-part sort of package we're doing. This is the film review section, which is obviously important. And we'll talk about, obviously, the tributes to the Duke of Edinburgh in the second part. But we've just actually reviewed Minari, or we've shared our thoughts on Minari. Sebastian has seen it, I've seen it, the others. Yaz is interested in going to see it. Rebecca might be persuaded. Robin and Kira so far not. Would you like to just share with us your own thoughts on this Korean family in Arkansas and Minari?
Indeed, yes, because I think Minari is a film. It's the way a simple story is told that had such tremendous appeal. Don't expect tremendous edge of the seat drama, or there are some surprises in it. But it's directed by Lee Isaac Chung, and it's nominated for 6 Oscars, which is most impressive. In 1983, the Korean Yi family moves from California to rural Arkansas to farm, and the idea is to sell Korean produce to Dallas vendors. And this leads to marital problems because this farm is the ideal for Jacob, played by Stephen Young. He's optimistic about it, but his wife, Monica, played by Han Yi Ree, is a great deal more worried because their son has a heart condition and what will happen to that. And indeed, they scrape by sexting chicks in the nearby hatchery, but also it leads to a lot of arguments. And then Maria's mother, who is Soon Ja, played by Yoon Yoo-jung, and she's been nominated. Indeed, she won at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, the SAGs, which was a terrific performance. And she joins them and attempts to be as helpful as she can. The problem is water. Water, originally the well doesn't, or finally runs dry, and subsequently they have to take advice on this, and Soon Ja takes the children to plant Minari seeds by the creek because this is a resilient form of plant, and that's very symbolic of the problems faced by immigrants, the likely Korean immigrants that we're discussing. And this is a very gentle movie. It has its ups and downs. The marriage, for example, between Jacob and Monica is far from easy. And subsequently, climactically, there is somewhat of a shock. But nonetheless, it's one of those movies which has got a very good cast. They all act exceptionally well. Certainly, Stephen Yeun as Jacob, a particular nod to him. And as I mentioned, Yoon Young has been nominated and very, very widely praised. It's visually, it's impressive. I won't say that this is a movie that will appeal to absolutely everybody. Some feel that they would perhaps rather see it on a small screen, which is most people. But it's a gentle film, but it's a film which draws its strength from observation. And it's well scripted, visually impressive. I thoroughly liked it. I definitely go to 9 out of 10, say, for a film like this, even perhaps 10, because its ambitions are relatively limited and it succeeds those, I think, very, very well. It's a movie that's had very wide appeal too, and I really liked it.
Excellent. Well, I gave it a 7 out of 10. Sebastian, what was your score for Minari?
I think I'd probably give it a solid 8, maybe not quite a 9, but it's a film I want to revisit, so my rating may go up in the future.
And I'm delighted that Richard actually did bring in something which I am denied about, but I thought it could be a spoiler, but what movie review would be complete without, of course, the concept of sexing chickens? To me, I think the ultimate sort of the winner that might actually nudge it up at least a half point to 7.5 for my good self. I mean, just very briefly, Rebecca, sexing chickens, does that actually sort of, you know, does that kind of pique your interest even further to this movie?
No, and does this have anything to do with the plot? I'm confused as to whether this critical. Does it? Oh, okay.
Critical, oh, absolutely. You can either sex chickens or not sex chickens. And if you drop the box of chickens, it doesn't matter because they'd just be thrown out in any... Yeah, exactly. It's just too much.
I feel I need to watch it to get the reference now, purely for that reason.
It will be important. Almost a Disney-esque moment. Richard, we've got just a few moments left in this first segment. Would you like to share with us the second movie you were looking to do this week?
Indeed, yes. Sequin in a Blue Room is the study of a 16-year-old gay teenager, and he seeks sex on a fictional hookup app. And that means that he gets a variety of clients, but casually, therefore he can cut them off if he doesn't want to see them again, which is normally what happens. But what makes this mesmerizing viewing is the absolutely fascinating central performance by Connor Leach as the eponymous sex-obsessed hero. The reason it's called Sequin is that he wears a sequin top during sex. And this is a movie where he uses social media to seek instant gratification, and that makes it one definitely with very considerable contemporary relevance. But at an anonymous sex party, he has a chance encounter with another guy who he finds electrifying. And this is a movie, it's his journey to try and link up with him again. And whether or not he does, what happens, nonetheless, this blow basically starts to blow his cover because his laid-back father, played by Jeremy Lindsay Taylor, hasn't any idea of what his son is getting up to nocturnally, nor indeed has anyone at his school. This changes, and director Samuel van Grinsven, I think he handles his experience and the material very, very well indeed. The tension is built up in this movie. Visually, I mean, the scenes, for example, the cruising scenes with the pulsating music, and it's uninhibited voyeurism. You get an idea of why it's so appealing to those who this sort of life appeals to. Very decadent, very hedonistic. Connor Leach's performance, excellent. Interesting use of close-ups. Visually, very, very striking. Making for visual, for riveting viewing. And a very fine supporting cast backing up what focuses on the central character. It's set, but it's incidental. The message is universal. It's a gay guy on his journey, but it's set in Sydney. And this is, I would say, for those the sort of movie appeals to, it's excellent. Sorry, Alex, I can't hear you.
That's because, once again, I just accidentally muted myself. It happens. I will say, though, the reason I actually didn't check this movie out was I thought, I've got to go one way. I can go Beneath, or I can go Sequin in a Blue Room. I feel that they're both kind of equally bad in certain ways, particularly when you look at the description that the Times actually gave of Sequin as the film begins, is burning through his Grindr-style hookup app called A Friend on a man-a-night basis until an impulsive trip to a local high-rise orgy in a blue-lit apartment sends his adolescent life spinning out of control. He becomes, in short, the lust object of a possessive and violent older man. I'm thinking, no, just don't go there. Rebecca, is this something which you've always said, yeah, I've always wanted to find out about a mildly distracted 16-year-old Sydney schoolboy who operates as that by day and a voraciously randy gay Don Juan by night?
I can't say it is something that would grab my attention. As Richard said, it sounds like it's very well made and, you know, credit for all of that. But for me personally, it's not a film that I'd gravitate towards. But It sounds like an interesting concept. It's something that, you know, isn't necessarily common, so there we go. Something different. So I don't think I'll give that film on this.
So is a giant catfish in parts of America. Yes, what about yourself? Sequin in a Blue Room?
Yeah, I think I might watch it. It seems very wild out there. So definitely better than the Catfish, I think.
Well, yeah, okay. There we are. And obviously sort of praise for Connor Leach. Indeed, the line has been given, it veers from deft to daft. Kira, not really the sort of thing I can imagine Disney actually doing a musical about, but you never know.
Oh, no, to me, it just sounds like, you know, a gay version of 50 Shades of Grey in a way, you know, with the whole...
Yeah, so, and we know how much Richard was such a fan of the 50 Shades series. I mean, it's just it's a whole line entirely. No, let's not go there, please. Sebastian, would you be checking this one out?
Maybe. I think Richard's review has sold it quite well, but I don't know how much of a priority it'll be.
Yeah. Robin, it sounds as though it's another one to add to the beneath category, possibly.
Well, that Catfish is looking pretty good now. I'm actually, again, aligning myself firmly with Kira. 50 Shades of Gay, no. Just no.
It isn't anything like that. 50 Shades, I did see it. I mean, honestly, it was terrible.
Okay, well, on that moment, we've reached the end of this particular filmic review session. We'll be returning in a few moments for something even more wonderful.